Well, welcome to a Superman homepage recording, a commentary, if you like, on the Smallville series finale. I'm Steve Yunus, and I'm joined by my good friends, Neil Bailey and Jeffrey Taylor. Hi, guys.
Hey.
Hello, hello.
Now, we all have our own thoughts on the series finale of Smallville, and we'll get to those comments throughout watching this episode. So on the word go, we'll all press play on our file of the series finale. So, ready, set, go. So we have previously on Smallville spoken by Justin Hartley as we look back at the first few episodes of Smallville from season one, and how excited were you guys watching this part of the episode?
Might have been the best part.
It does go through very quickly, and I mean, it jumped straight to season five, then it went back to season four. Here we are now. I mean, since this is a commentary, we're going into season nine, then back to six, and it's so quick.
It jumped around, didn't it?
Yeah.
It did. I really enjoyed, posted on the Superman homepage just a couple of days ago, the link to the video that had basically every episode of Smallville, just one quick, like, 1 second clip for each episode done.
It was very well done. Couldn't have been easy to...
217 total, right?
What was that?
Wasn't it 217 total?
218, I think, was the final count, with some of the episodes being double episodes. Which you've just given away one of the answers to the Super Trivia Quiz for this month.
Oh! This is what I get. I leave for a little while, and then I'm giving away all the answers.
All right, so it was a long introduction and a long look back, and we had Clark doing the phone booth thing and telling the Fortress goodbye and bye Jor-El, and then we fade to black and we hear Tom Welling saying now for the series finale of Smallville.
Yeah, there were a lot of retrospective montages in this thing.
Yeah, $2.99 was that the price of the comic book?
That's the price of the Smallville comic book that Chloe is reading to. I'm guessing that's her son.
That's her son. Now, we see Bow and Arrow there in the foreground. We've got to assume that's Oliver's son.
But he's supposed to end up with Black Canary. Okay, I realize it's the Smallville universe, and we might get into this once or twice over the course of this recording, but...
Yeah, well, maybe she's not married to him. Maybe it's just an illegitimate son.
Yeah. Could be.
Yeah,
could
hey, be I mean, even
strange
Superman
kid that she picked up on the street.
Stray kid, yeah. But, all right, now we have Apocalypse going past Saturn.
Poor Saturn.
Yeah, the rings of Saturn are just being obliterated. Now, could anyone...
And it's the size of Saturn, which actually does matter, because once it gets close to Earth, basically its gravity... Well, okay, it's already that close to Earth. But, I mean,
and then when it reaches Earth, isn't it about the same size as Earth? Or smaller?
Well, it just went past Saturn and appeared to be about the same size of Saturn. It came out of the back side of it, so it's got to be pretty close to that size, which means with that level of mass, it should actually pretty much destroy the Earth when it gets kind of close.
Yeah, pretty much.
Neil, you said something in your review that I really didn't even think of, but was, what is the point of Apocalypse coming to Earth?
Yeah, well, I mean, they got this situation where Darkseid's stated goal, such as it is, it's very vague, is to get souls, you know? Which is kind of following the Final Crisis thing. But in the comics, it's to basically to find the anti-life equation and annihilate all life. So, I think what they did was they just took the audience and assumed, since they know both versions of Darkseid, that would be coherent. But that doesn't mean the story is coherent when you randomly mash those two things together, you know?
Mm. So I didn't really understand what the point of Apocalypse coming that close to Earth was all about. But we now head into the Daily Planet, where Lois and Clark are getting into the elevator, and Clark's still going on about, you know, you're going to... You know, this wedding's going ahead, and she's going, didn't you listen to what I said last night? And we're doing that to and fro about whether or not the wedding's going to go ahead or not.
Yeah, they did this consistent thing where he's starting to wear the glasses, which I thought they would not do, and yet still the same time, and at the same time, at several points in the final episode, he's going without glasses, like at the wedding is a good example.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't get past that one.
Well, the thing about the glasses is that they really did wait a little bit too long in my opinion, to get to it. I mean, they had so many references to the glasses early on. You could go back to season 3 with the Whisper episode, where he actually has to wear glasses because he can't see properly.
Yep.
You could go back to season 5 with the one that was a long AccuView commercial. Right,
this is a prime example.
Like episode 101.
I don't mean to be to change the subject briefly, but that was a real example of, you know, the internet meme, Superman is a dick, you know? It's like, he stole her phone, and he went over and he took her, you know, he's like, yeah, you know, it was kind of one of those things that, I'm Superman, so I can do it, you know what I mean?
Now, was there a big, huge spoiler in there that was a bit of a giveaway with Aaron Ashmore's name popping up as guest star?
Yeah, I saw that, and it spoiled it for me.
Well, yeah, it spoils that it happens at the end, but I figure that it's really okay because it is the finale. All these people are coming back. I mean, Jonathan Kent is dead too, and John Schneider gets a credit.
Yep, no, fair enough. But yeah, when I saw his name, I went, oh, he's back.
Yeah. I mean, or it could be Bug Boy.
Hey, you never know.
He was the ice guy, wasn't he?
That's right, yeah, he wasn't Bug Boy. Bug Boy came back for the Homecoming episode.
Right.
Yes, but, what was Aaron Ashmore... Let's see, his brother was the other guy from season 1 and then came back in season 3. What was his name? Something else Ashmore. Aaron and who's the other guy?
Oh, I don't know, but they did that 3 thing with Van McNulty, the nutty candy bar guy. Oh, God. I can't even remember. But that one episode in Bell Rev, I know what you're talking about.
But this is a great scene, just to focus on this scene for just one second. This is a wonderful scene because there's only so many times that we're really going to get this Clark and Lois sort of scene.
Yeah.
And it was the one that they actually sent out as a preview clip. So it was a good one to show the change in their relationship. For once, he's not the one that's got doubts. She's the one that's got doubts, and he's the one who knows exactly what his path is. So that was a good scene.
God, I could just watch this on mute, though, just to take a look at Lois Lane. I mean, isn't she gorgeous? Jeez. I swear. You know, I don't usually... In my review, I criticize that whole using someone's beauty as a way to get viewers, but that is one of the most magnificently beautiful women in the world. It's nuts.
Then we go into... the Chloe and Oliver scene in the church where they're setting up the flowers and that, and my wife mentioned, oh, is she back? Like, it was kind of, she kind of popped up without anybody knowing where Chloe had been for
yeah, and bang,
couple
they're
episodes.
Married.
Well, they were married from that episode where they, you know, the hangover episode, if you like, so
yeah.
they've stuck with that, and...
Oh, okay. See, I had completely spaced over that. That's the thing. It was just...
I had as well, actually.
Ah.
So yeah, it was really weird the whole way that Oliver could one minute be darkness and next minute be positive and
yeah, look at this guy. He sure looks corrupted by the darkness.
I've got to say that there were a lot of things from the very beginning of the show that I expected by the end of the show. Lex Luthor to forget what Clark's face looked like, that sort of thing. One of the things that I honestly expected was the death of Chloe Sullivan.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen, clearly. I mean, we saw her 7 years later being an adult. Mm-hmm. I just expected this to be a character that would have a very profound death that would affect Superman or Clark Kent in such a major way. I really thought that's the direction they were going to go, and they did not go that direction. Now, part of me is sort of disappointed at that, but part of me is also thinking, like, wow, you surprised me.
Sure. I think that Chloe is the linchpin that kind of unhinged the show. If they had gone ahead and killed her at the end of season 3, I think it could have gone in a whole different direction. And I think it was there that they started saying, well, people like this, so we're going to do it, even if it doesn't necessarily make sense. We like Chloe, so we're going to keep her, even though the story demands X. And they did the same thing. We're like, well, yeah, I know Lionel Luthor has run his course, but we're going to keep him 7 years. And I know that Lex Luthor isn't supposed to know Clark is Superman, but hey, it sounds cool, so let's do it. People will like it, you know? It seemed to be the whole attitude, generally.
But But at the same time, when they had that whole discussion of somebody major is going to die in the 100th episode, my thoughts were, okay, it's going to be either Jonathan Kent or Chloe Sullivan.
Right. See, I had a gut that they would that was, you know, that was another linchpin moment like the end of season 3. For the first half of that episode, I thought they might actually kill Lana Lang and make this kind of its own story. And, you know, part of that was like I didn't like the character of Lana Lang, but part of me said, okay, maybe they're going to really embrace this being an alternate continuity and move things forward. And they did that for the whole show. There would be many, many moments where they'd be like, hey, this is going to be a big something. And then they'd pull back because they had 10 years to fill. And they didn't know that at the time. At first it was like 4 years, then 5 years, then 6 years. And I remember thinking and talking with Steve at like the 5 year mark, like, well, I guess it can't go more than 1 year. I mean, they've really gone, you know. And here we are 3 years into the Tess Mercer storyline?
Yep, I think she's been around for 3 seasons. And here she's being confronted by Granny Goodness, who warns her of the, or tells her that the apocalypse is, or the apocalypse, as she says it in this episode, is upon us. And you know, says that she wants to save her, but Tess has chosen her side. And I really liked the actress that they chose for Granny Goodness. I thought she really pulled it off really well.
Yeah, she looks the part very, very well. Tess, you know, it's kind of weird because I don't see her as a character I know very much about, and yet she was on. Wasn't she on the show longer than Pete, or was she on the show as long as Pete?
As long.
Okay. See, it's weird. Like, I feel I know Pete really, really well, but I don't feel I know Tess Mercer at this point at all. This should be a point where she's like, hey, should I fall to the darkness or should I stay with the light? And it just seems kind of rather like you don't know either way based in her character. And that's kind of frustrating. That frustrated me about that scene.
Now, did anyone feel that the commercials in this episode were extremely long? I mean, we've cut them out and this is what we're doing now, but do they seem to go for a long time, your commercials?
I could not comment on that because I watched a copy without commercials.
Fair enough.
I did watch it with commercials, but I don't really watch TV very often. I basically made an exception for this.
Okay. Now, we have the Martha Kent back in the Smallville house. You see the reflection of Jonathan in the photo frame, and she's disappointed at Clark having put the house up for sale. When she sent him the deed, she didn't anticipate that he'd be doing that. I think she was giving it to him as a gift for he and Lois. And I thought this was... it was kind of the crux of the matter with her and her disappointment with him that he has to feel like he has to leave his past behind him to move forward. And she's saying, no, you should allow your past to actually make you who you are and build your character. I felt that, the selling of the house was probably... glossed over a little bit, but it was probably the crux of the matter, if you like.
Yeah, they never really resolved this in the story, and it's kind of a weird note to end with Martha. I mean, I know she shows up in the wedding and all, but this is kind of, it's kind of the end is like Clark is like, I don't need you, I don't need this anymore, and she's just kind of left hanging in a sad way. Well, there's that scene in the barn where he decides.
I was going to say, to do their credit, that scene in the barn was really a parting scene for her and Jonathan, and they were really sending Clark on his way, so it was a bit more of a fitting ending than just this scene in the Kent house. Yeah.
Well, what's sort of interesting about it is that Clark has to move on and move to Metropolis and be an official Metropolis resident in order to be Superman. That's a big part of who Superman is. He's moved on from Smallville. And I think that's what the scene is really trying to address, but it is also sort of paying homage to all the things that have come before in Smallville, especially the earlier seasons where Martha Kent was around.
Yeah.
And yes, she's going to have a certain longing for being back on the farm, and that's something that she's going to experience, and that makes sense to me within the universe of Smallville as well.
Sure. And I think in Superman 3, the movie that he was looking at selling the farm back when his mother passed away, or
that was in the beginning of 4.
4.
4. Yeah.
That's right. So, she's kind of having a go at him for cutting out the parts of the past that make him who he is. But And they don't come to any agreement in this scene. He says to her, no, I'm sorry, to move on, you have to leave the past behind you. And she's saying, no, you have to hold on to it. So they kind of come to an impasse at the end of this scene and don't really come to an agreement whatsoever.
Well, Clark at this point is also very much at a point where he is letting go of his past. And I personally feel that he should still be embracing parts of his past, especially the positive aspects. But remember, he did bury his father's watch where his father's grave is, mm-hmm. to get rid of it, to not have to dwell on the past, which, again, is something that I disagree with, but it's something that is going on for the character at this point.
Now, were you surprised when you saw Jonathan show up there?
I thought it was nice. It was one of the better parts of the finale, is the way they used Jonathan, honestly.
And you really never really understood whether or not the characters saw him. Like some of their reactions, sometimes you thought, oh, can she see him? Can he see him? And obviously nobody could, except for Clark, when he did finally see him in the fortress.
Right, and yeah, I had some very interesting discussions right after the episode aired about, was this the real Jonathan Kent as a ghost, or was this, you know, just something in their minds? And I'm not one who actually believes in ghosts or the supernatural at all, but a part of me still believes that this is the real Jonathan Kent.
Yeah, I think so too.
Real in their minds, if nothing else. So some way or another, it is the real Jonathan Kent.
Yeah,
I didn't see it. Oh, I was going to say, I didn't see it so much as a ghost as an actual, like, the manifestation of what they knew of him and how he kind of stuck with them even after he had died, you know? What you learn from somebody when they pass on, I guess.
Yeah. Now, this scene with Chloe and confronting Lois in the Daily Planet and trying to convince her to, you know, that Clark doesn't see her as being in his way, as being, you know, a ball and chain that grounds him, but more that she, you know, she makes him who he is, and she gives him the copy of Clark's vows for her to read. And I thought it was a very touching moment with Lois standing there in the hustle and bustle of the Daily Planet, taking the time out to read these vows, and they were quite good vows, you know, from a romantic point of view, and Chloe and Lois just the welling up of tears in their eyes is a quite a touching moment.
Yeah.
Now, what did you make of the vows? Was it something that you would consider using in your wedding?
you talking to me?
Well, I'm already married.
Yeah. Well, I would say they're kind of, you know, there's some parts of them that are very good. I think that the actual prose is kind of kitschy, but I think that the way that they were used in terms of, like, as a romantic bumper, were actually, it worked better than some aspects of things. The problem with this, for me, is not so much that it's a beautiful scene, but the fact that I know it precedes it, and I know that it was kind of a light switch, the wedding is off kind of thing, done at the last minute. So I'm kind of still focused on why is she calling off the wedding to begin with when the relationship has been so good for the last, you know, year.
I love the part where she said, I'm such an idiot.
It does sort of draw me back to the comics, because remember right before they actually got married in the comics, Lois said the wedding's off and ran away.
That's right.
Yeah.
Which is something we'll be talking about on From Crisis to Crisis, the Superman podcast, which you can find on the Superman homepage.
Plug.
Now, sorry, plugging myself.
Now, we will get touch on the vows being read a second time later on during the wedding scene, and we'll comment on that as that happens. But now we're heading into the Watchtower, where Tess suddenly realizes that she's being shut out of all the systems. She can't, you know, the satellites are down. She can't even get into Oliver's computer systems like she should be able to, and she finds out that the reason is because Oliver himself has put in a program that has shut everything down, and a command that, you know, everything is offline.
Yeah, it seems like Ollie had a lot of... It was kind of unclear as to whether he was in control of his actions or not, and they never really explored it. It seemed a little bit rushed, but here is kind of the culmination of that. You got to wonder, though, like, Green Arrow suddenly has the ability to do all of these technical computer things. That's one of the things that I noticed in the review, was that, you know, like, every character at any point can control any computer in any way. And there you go. Okay, see, Apocalypse was about the size of Earth there.
Oh, well, it's hard to tell just like how far with the camera, how far the camera is compared to it. But yeah, it does seem to be comparatively similar in size. And now we have Oliver coming to see the three minions of Darkseid.
The triumvirate, as it were.
Yeah, Granny, Godfrey, and who's the other guy?
We got Desaad, Godfrey.
Desaad.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting about that is that, yeah, they really did not explore Darkseid throughout the entire thing. It was just sort of something that was in the background.
A threat.
And, yeah, yes, a threat. And unfortunately, he's not going to, by the end, really comes to full fruition, which was also sort of the problem with Doomsday in Season 8. Mm-hmm. But what's funny is somebody, I wish I could tell you exactly who, because I would love to plug that person who probably also does a podcast or two. But somebody did ask me, would it matter at the end of this, and I don't want to talk too much about the end, but something to think about, would it matter at the end of this or the end of any other season after, say, Season 6, 7, 8, 9, 10? Whether or not he became Superman at the end in the way that he did.
Well, I guess
he could have done the same thing with Zod. He could have done the same in Season 9. He could have done the same thing with Doomsday at the end of Season 8. Mm. So on and so forth.
Well, I guess the only thing that differs in this one is that the fact that Apocalypse was something that could only be moved by someone of Clark's abilities.
Right. It's unclear kind of what he does. He grabs the planet and he shoves it out of the way, but that was one thing that I saw that was a kind of valid complaint, is he flies by and all of the Omega beams, or all, not the Omega beams, the Omega marks on people's foreheads disappear, but you don't really, it's not really clear why. If they're inspired, it's just like by seeing a guy flying by, maybe? I don't know.
It kind of seems to coincide with the shadow of Apocalypse, you know, the sun coming back, you know, the light, if you like, shining back on Earth, and Apocalypse being moved out of the way to allow that to happen. But
yeah, it does make me think symbolic of the Filmation Justice League episode. I want to say episode, but it's like, you know, a 5 to 7 minute cartoon animated short where Superman goes to China and pushes on the Earth so that it goes farther away from the sun because it's coming in too close to the sun and it's burning up.
Right.
And that just made me laugh hysterically, and consequently I had to kind of laugh at that. I do want to take a second just to talk about the Jonathan Kent scene that we just watched, mm-hmm, because that was hugely important, and again, I feel like that's the real Jonathan Kent. Oliver Queen has already walked up at this point.
Yeah, and it's interesting that Oliver does walk up, because he's just come from being with the three of Darkseid's minions, and here he is actually giving Clark a bit of a pep talk. So it's kind of like, how did he go from being such a negative, dark person, now he's the positive, best friend person? It kind of was a bit, you know, kind of grated on my nerves a little
bit. Always been his role since he was the leader of the Justice League, and Clark was not willing to join the Justice League.
Yeah, I understand that.
In a very
that,
similar fashion, yeah. But I think they're really kind of trying to pay homage to who these characters have been,
yeah,
generally, instead of who they are at this point.
Sure.
And that seems to be the case sort of across the board.
How did he?
With the exception of Lois.
How did Ollie even know that Superman or that Clark was there? That's another thing.
Well, he might have gone to the house, and then Martha told him he's gone off to, you know, it's, who knows?
Yeah.
But,
The reason I mention that is it's another example of one of those things where, like, you can look at it and you can be like, hey, you know, he found his way there somehow. Or yeah, you can be like, hey, why didn't the writers make an A to B there? At least, that, you know, it seems like there's two eyes that kind of look at the show. And a lot of people forgive a lot. And I tend to be more critical because I know crafting a story, you can think about things like those and correct them with either a minor scant bit of dialogue or a little bit of staging. You know, there's all kinds of ways to make things more coherent like that.
You know, that happens again later on in this episode where Clark comes across Tessa's car and You wonder how he knew randomly.
Well, they do that. They do the scan it, enhance. I think the answer is that at
the end of season six, when there are no satellites in the sky except for Oliver Queen's, that's still the case.
Yeah. Okay.
So we saw him on satellite.
Sure. Now we have Clark coming to see Lois because he agrees with her that maybe they shouldn't get married, but Lois has had a change of heart, and we have this really well-constructed scene around this door, and they revolve the camera nicely around both sides of the door throughout this scene, and you know Lois is getting her wedding dress on, and I was really interested to see that when she passes Clark her vows, that it's all with red marker and with, you know, it's all these spelling errors, and, you know, it's a real reporter's edited version of the vows, where Clark's was nice, neat handwriting.
Yeah. Does that turn into her final wedding dress? As I recall, I remember that her dress, her final dress, was different than the one she's wearing there. It kind of struck me as odd. Maybe I saw it wrong. But
maybe there's more to it than just the undergarment that she's kind of wearing at the moment. But, you know, with the veil and everything else, we'll have to look and have a look at that as we get to the wedding scene. But, I would really like this scene revolving around the door. And you have to wonder what was going through Lois's mind when Clark was reading her vows, because it was all in his mind and she's standing there in silence wondering if he's still on the other side of the door. And then finally he says, "I'm still here." And there's one for the completists out there, that her actual door number is 207.
And I do want to point out that even though they're not shown, in the interest of keeping things Superman oriented, that her undergarments in question, even though we don't see them, are pink.
Well done, sir. I see what you did there.
Very good. But yeah, this was a touching moment in the episode, and it some people said it dragged on a bit and that they felt that the first hour was too slow, but really part one was, you could say, titled Wedding.
Oh, I completely agree. If they had broken this up over two episodes, as they had originally intended to do with Absolute Justice, where that was very much a one part and a two part, and even the opening credits say in both that and in this one, part one by these people, part two by these people, they are two different episodes, that this one would be called something to the effect of Wedding.
Yeah. Now, I thought it was a really good scene here where Lois mentions what her father and her mother would be saying to her at this point in time if they were with her, which is kind of, I think Martha would be giving her a big, A-plus for doing that, because she's showing him that, you know, your parents and the even though they're not with you, the past can, you know, be important to who you are and what is happening at this moment. And Clark starts thinking about the fact that Jonathan wouldn't say anything, that he would just see the look on his face and know what he was thinking. And I think he realizes that, yeah, you can move on without leaving everything behind.
Yeah.
Which is hugely important to the character and unfortunately gets taken away from Lex Luthor, but we're going to get to that.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Clark's reading Lois's edited, marked vows, and we revolve around the door in a shot that's, you know, well, a sequence that's really well done. And Lois is standing there, having just said something and had no response from Clark, and is waiting for him. I wonder whether she knows he's reading the vows, and I suspect that she does, but he's reading them and, you know, comes to the realization that, yes, they are supposed to be together and things are going to go ahead as planned.
This really is a beautifully set up sequence of shots, and I really do kind of wish that Clark kicked in the door, even though it would knock Lois out at this point.
I think all the shots in the finale were exceptionally well done. It was is really well filmed. The whole series generally had a good DP for most of the episodes. I just really was. That was something I could never single out and complain about, because it was always done so well.
Now, I think this hands on the door on each side of the door was kind of referenced again at the aeroplane scene later on. I thought that was well done and a good moment. And again, Erica Durance is so good at bringing tears to her eyes.
And it's very much a Pyramus and Thisbe style thing, which of course is the Romeo and Juliet reference.
Yep.
Right.
Now so they're both on opposite sides of the door, but they're very much in love and just can't touch at that moment.
Yeah. Now we have Tess freaking out that there's a lot of interference, trying to get on her phone. Now she knows what's going on with Oliver, and all of a sudden she's being apprehended by these men in black cars, and you know she's in a silver car or a white car, and she tries to escape, but to no avail. And we don't know who these men are. We don't know why they're coming after her. We just know that they're breaking a window in, and she's in trouble.
Lionel Luthor has suddenly hired goons, even though he didn't know. What was the deal with the Earth 2 Lionel Luthor? Didn't he kill his son for being weak?
Yeah, but he regretted it for the rest. You know, he regretted taking Clark over Lex, and was, you know, this Earth was his way of being able to redeem that poor decision. Now, who was this guy who brought Martha down the aisle? Was he just an usher?
That was officially some guy.
I think that's the intern that she's been hanging out with since she became a senator. Yeah.
The Lionel Luthor that you're talking about, if you're going to talk about him being from Earth with a number behind it, it should be Earth 3.
Yeah. Well, I was using the Earth 2 in the sense of...
an alternate Earth.
Yeah, because post-crisis continuity...
Yeah, well, there you go, Neil. The dress, different. She was... There's no straps.
Yeah, okay. I was like, she was wearing a bridesmaid's dress, wasn't she, for the most part?
Well, it had straps on it. Now, when she walked
That's one of those things that I never notice, because I don't notice people's clothing. Maybe I'm male.
Now, she walks into the church.
That would be my lechery, because I was looking at Lois's, you know, shoulders.
Now, she walks into the church, and my wife said, "Where's Clark?" And I think that's what Lois is thinking, and it was like, "Yeah, where is he? Why is everybody smiling?" And, you know, and then I thought it was such a touching moment, and it really brought a tear to the eye when he grabbed her hand, because she'd already mentioned earlier that, you know, okay, her father's not going to be there. She'll just be a big girl and walk herself down the aisle. And I thought that was such a Clark Kent moment that, you know, no, he's not going to let her walk herself down the aisle and be there on her own. He'll do that with her.
Right.
Which is such a beautiful moment. I mean, I almost don't want to speak over it. Right.
Exactly.
The piano's so nice.
They chose a good song.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be many people's bridal waltz for Smallville fans of the future. And it was, you know, the slow motion walk down the aisle, and you know, lovely smile, and you know, he glances across at his mother, and there's Jonathan in the background again, looking spiffy in a nice black jacket. But
and I've got to say, Martha is still hot.
Radiant. Yeah, and who are all these people? Who are these guests?
all of the people who know his secret, all 100 of them.
Well, yeah, he's not wearing his glasses,
he's not wearing
as you mentioned
glasses.
Earlier. Yeah.
I think I just saw Bug Boy back there.
Yeah, there you go.
And there's a nice, three-piece string quartet. Not a quartet if there's three of them, but in the corner there. And then we break to a commercial, and we come back to the chapel. And it was interesting from a religious point of view that they had a female minister, which obviously closes down just exactly what religion he is. But
they're Episcopalian, apparently.
There you go. And now, again, we have people saying, why did they have to repeat the vows as a voiceover when we'd already heard them earlier? Did this just kind of pad out that section, or was it just another nice romantic scene and just a way of looking at each character one at a time?
I'm thinking that that's exactly what it was.
Yep.
I know that if they were going to do if you were going to do that idea you were mentioning, you know, like a Smallville-themed wedding, they'd have to keep the veil on until the very last second, and then they wouldn't show all of the face when they kissed. You'd just fold it up over the mouth and give a brief peck and then leave.
And, you know, it is very touching.
Upside down if it were a Spider-Man show.
yeah, exactly.
Now, obviously earlier we'd seen Oliver show Chloe, you know, and the rings, and she was saying, oh, you know, simple and elegant, and, you know, that's very nice, and which was obviously a, you know, standing point for the fact that this ring that he's now reaching over to give to Lois looks totally different to what she saw earlier. And, you know, she starts getting a bit concerned and, you know, the sun hits it and she realizes that it's gold kryptonite. And even though you said, Neil, in your review, you know, it's an inch from his finger.
Yeah.
You know, other kryptonite doesn't have to be that close to affect him.
They did that through the whole show. That was one of the things that really irked me the most. It's like he could be 10 feet away and it would affect him, or it would be right next to him, or he could be holding a bag with kryptonite in it and it wouldn't bug him at all.
Now,
at some points it would make his blood boil. Other times it would be a very mild annoyance.
Now, these black contacts I had for Oliver were pretty disconcerting, weren't they?
Very much so. No, I mean, they fill his eyes to say, like, this is who this person is. They really do fill his eyes, and that's what matters, I think. Almost like ink in a way.
Yeah. And we have the Clark saving Lois.
There goes the bride. Yeah, I know.
This is just like my wedding. No, I was married at a ruined castle on the banks of Loch Ness, and we had a bagpiper instead of piano.
There you go. Fantastic. Now, again, you know, Clark confronting Oliver, and you got the blackness taking over him, and, you know, Clark, as per usual, is trying to do everything but fight and try to talk down a person, which is true to character.
Wonder what all those people attending the wedding think about this.
Well, yeah, I mean, they just now, they, you know, they've seen Clark
like,
get...
like, okay, wedding's off, someone went homicidal.
Well, they saw Clark get thrown out the window
and... the camera, or calling the cops, you know.
Oh, who replaced the holy water with tar?
Yeah, I didn't quite get that. It seemed a little bit, yeah, okay.
Well, Oliver touched it, and there was just this moment where Oliver... You know, Clark was looking at Oliver with those contacts in his eyes.
Notice how neither of them have any black goo on their suits, even though they just both got splashed with it.
They had it wiped off between scenes.
Now, he talks Oliver down and he talks the darkness out of him. And, you know, that... is something, I guess, Superman can do. He can inspire people, and that's what we hope the character does. And Oliver is... I guess he breaks the kryptonite there, I don't know, but... he's now good.
I see where they're going with the whole thing of Clark being the inspiration that can become Superman, that can then get Oliver to do that. And in some ways, that makes sense. In other ways, it has a cheese factor of Limburger proportions.
Yeah.
But so Oliver is now no longer possessed by Darkseid's darkness, and Clark just gives him a hand up with the hand that he crushed the ring with. But anyway.
Oh no, not another meteor shower.
And they look out the window, and there it is. Apocalypse is... taking over, well, is obliterating the sun, or blocking out the sun.
strange atmospheric changes. I like that. It's like a giant planet appears, and they're going to be like, strange atmospheric change. No, I tell you what, clouds that are blue, or green clouds are a strange atmospheric disturbance. A freaking planet that eclipses the moon is apocalypse. You know, you can use the term apocalypse.
Yeah.
Heck, I don't know.
Now, Clark,
same thing happened at the end of season, what was it, 6?
Yeah, this is pretty much the same thing as season 6. It's the exact same feeling. They stand around walking and talking while this thing is happening, doing nothing about it until the very end.
Now, Clark, he's Tessa's
message. The average person is not thinking, oh no, we're all going to die. The average person is thinking, oh no, not again.
Yeah.
So, you know, this was an interesting moment for Chloe's character because she says, I've got to go to my computers to access my database, and she hugs Clark, and it's a farewell. Well, even though we see her again at the very end with her son once more finishing off the comic book story, this is really Chloe's farewell. She's hugging Clark, saying goodbye, she says goodbye to Oliver, and we get the slow-mo walk away into the sunset, if you like.
After all this time, she never brings a laptop?
But, yeah, it's. I thought it was
this
a
time she should have an iPhone.
Yeah.
Yeah, she should have, or a BlackBerry, depending on which side of the line you're sitting on. Now they kiss, and it's a nice shot that with the Apocalypse in the background behind them, and she walks off, and it's not just a walk off; it's a slow mo, as if you know, say goodbye to Chloe Sullivan.
So, does it bother anybody else that Apocalypse is not the traditional Apocalypse at all? It's really kind of War World.
Yeah,
if it did, they would have stopped watching Smallville 5-10 years ago.
Well, I'm wondering about you guys specifically. I know that there are plenty of people who watch this and they're just like, "Oh, this is happening now."
Yeah, now
it
Clark
didn't
sees
look like
Jonathan
a place of
there,
civilization.
So. Well, I mean, Apocalypse, it had the fires coming out of certain pits, so I guess that made it Apocalypse. And many people I saw on Twitter were going, "Well, what's this meteor?" And I'm going, "It's not a meteor, it's a freaking planet."
Yeah.
But here, we're in the barn, and Clark actually sees Jonathan. And he says, "I knew you'd see me eventually." Now, you know, obviously, you know, he's an entity that is there, you know, a sentient entity. So he's, it's not just what people see in their minds necessarily. But, you know, whether it's a ghost or whether it's the spirit of Jonathan Kent, just like, you know, say the spirit of Christmas past, who knows?
Which is kind of why I say that no matter how you look at it from a spiritual standpoint, that this is the real Jonathan Kent.
Exactly.
I mean, we saw him from an alternate universe, we saw him in Clark's head, and that may have been in Clark's head, but no matter how you look at it, this is supposed to be the real Jonathan Kent.
100%. He knows my weakness. He almost defeated me. Now, I thought it was interesting, the choice after this scene, because Martha comes into the barn, and obviously she doesn't see Jonathan, but, you know, it's the family again together in the Kent farm barn, and I only knew it from the fact that Greg Beeman's blog says that they actually changed that they took one of scene from his section of part two and put it into this section of part one, and that was Clark going from here to find Tessa's car, which was an interesting decision from an editing point of view, because it's supposed to be a heroic moment of him leaving the Kent farm, leaving Jonathan and Martha behind, and it kind of goes down to a mundane scene of him finding Tessa's car.
Yeah, there's a big part of me that wishes that this could have moved on to him going into the fortress and putting on the suit.
Which I think was the intent was for him to go from here to the fortress, but for editing reasons they decided that whatever reason, it would work better if he'd found Tessa's car at this point rather than later on.
Before you arrived. So this is both of his parents talking to him, even though that she does not appear to see Jonathan Kent, and telling him that it's okay to move on.
Exactly.
And it's okay to become the person that you were always meant to be.
And we get a family group hug.
Yes.
I think, you know, when I first watched it, I thought that this would be the point where he started to fly. I thought he was about to basically, because of the love of his parents, which was essentially the thing that formed him into Superman over the course of this show, he would suddenly be at moral peace and be able to rise up into the air. But instead, it's kind of super omniscient Jor-El who finally says, "Okay, I grant you my power from beyond the grave in an arbitrary, strange way that I couldn't possibly have done."
Yeah, of course,
which
kind of
irked me.
Jonathan just did say to him, "Son, it's time." And he zooms out of the barn, and it's time, what, to go find Tess. But anyway, they both look up at the Apocalypse going further across the sun. And
yeah, see, I had a slightly different thought when he finally did go ahead and start flying, but I want to hold that off until we actually get to it.
Okay, now we get a very shaggily bearded Lionel Luthor leaning over Tess on the slab there, and she's very uncomfortable, and he is very creepy and very hands-on, and places his hands in some awkward places at some stages, but
oh my goodness, I didn't even think about that. That just happened.
Yes. he's very hands-on in this scene, and he's obviously, you know, got ideas for Tess that she has no idea of at this point in time, and we learn that you know, he wants her heart for Lex.
I give you my heart. Do, 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 do.
Captain and Tennille.
Yeah, there you go.
Now, did now you were saying earlier, Neil, about the fact that Lionel, you know, why all of a sudden does he want to save Lex, and why is now Lex the big focus of his ambitions? And I guess, as I was saying earlier, that he realizes that he made an error in judgment by allowing, by taking on Clark and killing Lex in his own reality, and realizes that he made a big mistake in that universe.
It's also the possibility, and this could be taken whichever way you want to take it, but there's also the possibility that Lex from the Earth that this Lionel is from was not destined to be the bad guy.
Sure.
And that's part of why he was killed.
It's very strange to imagine Lex as kind of a Frankenstein monster, too, ultimately. It follows the comic to a degree in terms of the Lex Luthor, the second clone thing, but it's also kind of, I don't know, Lionel ran his course at this point, and to bring him back for the end just to be kind of another...
Well, he
it kind of makes Lex's... It kind of undermines Lex's journey in another way, because at this point, both characters, both Lex and Clark, become who they are because they're kind of predestined to by everybody around them. It's not a natural evolution of character. And this is another key example. Lex just, boom, pops up because of Lionel Luthor, and then, boom, he's given the neurotoxin by Tess, and so he's evil, and created by Lionel. Well, the whole point of the show was that it was a moral journey for both characters, that Lex tried and failed, and Clark tried and succeeded.
I have to wonder what Lex's plan was, because he wouldn't have known that Lionel would come from the alternate Earth. So who was protecting his cloned body and getting the parts together for him, if not Lionel?
It's another case of, if you think too much, you're not doing it right, you know.
Yeah, basically, if it's not Lionel and it's not Tess, it's got to be somebody else who he trusts. And so, consequently, it's got to be somebody that we've never been introduced to and we'll never see again.
Yep. Now, here we see Michael Rosenbaum for the first time, and he is very much a Frankenstein monster with all the parts sewn together.
I like how they went with that thematic. I don't know if you know the second title of Frankenstein.
No.
The Modern Prometheus.
Okay.
And basically, there's that whole line in Superman Returns where Lex wants to be a Promethean figure, if that makes sense. And I really like that interpretation of Lex, where he's kind of a guy who wants to bring fire to the people, but gods are preventing him, even though he has abilities, you know? And so he keeps essentially eating his own liver.
Now, here we have Clark, having zoomed from the barn, finds Tess's phone under the seat using his X-ray vision and sees her last recorded message on the phone.
It's funny. That doesn't really give him any new information.
True. But it
Tess is in trouble.
It ties up the fact that she's been kidnapped. And there he is with his hands on again.
Yeah. It was really pervy.
It was.
The whole thing.
Yeah, hands on chest, hands on shoulders, hands on hips.
Oh, he's not finished yet.
They're like practicing.
Now his hands on chest.
Yeah, there
again.
You go. Oh, he's copping another field.
Yeah, reap again.
And I was impressed with her skills here. She, there he goes, kissing her as well, and hands on lips and. He's very, and then hands on the leg as he parts.
he's like, he's not paying me enough for this last guest star, so I'm going to get fun on the way out.
Well, he is taken over by Darkseid, so I mean, the way that if I were trying to find a justification for it, I would assume that it's to make her uncomfortable.
Definitely,
yeah, not taken over by Darkseid. That's the ticket. I'm John Glover. No, I'm with you. I don't think of
John Glover as being like that. I think that it was part of the character he was trying to
definitely,
portray.
Definitely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, but no, it was good
work. He was like, here's a chance to touch this girl or anything.
Now,
he can still talk and move around even though he's been shot through the lung, and it looks like he was shot through the heart. That was kind of like a bad choice to do right before they were going to be like, I'm taking your heart.
Yeah, exactly. That was my point. Was did he get shot in the heart, or was it a bit lower than that? Because if she was smart, she would have shot him in the heart, because that would have been, obviously a problem for Lex.
He can crawl and talk and oh man, this was probably the most cheesetastic moment in the whole thing. Listening to Darkseid talk. There is it's like what is that, a 5-year old with a Darth Vader mask? Come on, guys.
Hey, Darkseid.
So I'm not going to show you my mouth.
So does Lex now have a 60-year-old's heart?
Yeah, good point. Good point. Well, good thing he has those high white blood cells that were never mentioned again.
And I don't see a very good, very surgical precision of cutting out that heart there. It's going to be a messy job.
Yeah, that's the new spinoff show, Darkseid MD.
And what's funny about that is that, I mean, Lex Luthor is going to get cloned a few years from now and come back as his own son anyway. So it's okay that he doesn't have the right heart.
Or the right hand! Ha ha!
Yeah, it's interesting that he got all these body parts back, but his right hand is still rubbish.
Yeah.
Now, we're outside
the
daily...
That's what he uses!
Yeah, well, we're out... We're outside the daily. We go into the Daily Planet, and there, Lois and Clark are, you know, talking about where Tess is and what's going on, and yeah, it's kind of like an interesting moment at this point in the episode.
Again, this is basically how a lot of season finales have worked out. That something big is going on at the Daily Planet to explain whatever the big crisis is, and they've been doing that since season 5.
And it's interesting that they're listening in on a radio. Obviously, the TV networks are not working. That, you know, listen, you can only tune in on an old analog radio because of the fact that all the systems are down, and all the interference of the fact that Apocalypse is so close is ruining all the other types of communication systems.
Well, it's interesting for me because when 9/11 happened here in the U.S., I was living outside Washington, D.C., and the Red Cross needed ham radio operators to work outside. Oh, yeah, and here's a whole bunch of people with the Omega symbols.
Yes.
But they wanted ham radio operators to operate outside the Pentagon so right. that there wouldn't be any interruption if there was another attack or anything like that. Mm-hmm. They could have used cell phones at that point. It was 2001. But they went with ham radio operators, and I happened to have gotten a ham radio license in 7th grade.
And there you go, Neil, with one of your photos of Zoom In and Enhance.
Freeze it! Enhance!
And they get the number plate, and they're just straight into the DMV or whatever they call them, and got the not license plate and who owns it. And then Lois goes around to her computer and finds out information that, you know, is probably classified, and whiz bang, they've got it.
I
want to get whatever program they're using.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's probably the most annoying TV trope to me in existence, other than, and this isn't really a trope, but the a positive than negative dialogue construction. I know that you want me to give you the red ball, but I need it for myself. And if you listen for that in regular TV shows, it will drive you nuts because they use it all the time. Clark, I know you want to take care of Tess right now, but the world needs saving. It's all over the place, and they used it in Smallville everywhere.
And again, it's something that we're making fun of in Smallville, but it's a TV thing. It's not just
a
Smallville.
Yes, everywhere.
That's a very powerful
she's
kiss,
gorgeous,
that one.
Isn't she?
Very powerful kiss. Did the world light up for you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look at her. Is she not?
Who wears that to work, but seriously? Let's and the military has a plan to take care of things, and they're finding out that what is this plan? What could the military
know?
Which
is never a good idea.
That's another point. Right there, they could have fixed the whole thing. Like, Clark has no way of knowing she's on Air Force One, and yet they could have fixed it right there. They could have had Clark stick around for 10 more seconds, you know?
Yeah, and now she meets this character who we've never seen before, who has, obviously, the inside run on stories to do with the president, and Lois decides to conquer on the head and take over her her press ID.
That she graduated from Smallville High.
She probably did, yeah. She probably was infected by green kryptonite somewhere along the line, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's funny, too, like, if you listen to the press debriefing, they know all of the people that are on that plane with the president by name and face. They give them nicknames, you know? Like Bush was famous for that. He'd give all the reporters nicknames that would be around with them, you know? They know these people. It's not like you could just conk them on the head and take their place.
Well, I guess this woman looks similar enough to Lois in appearance that she could maybe, you know, with the right press pass, somehow get past a comic book convention security guy, but yeah.
Well, if I were president and had to nickname that person, I would nickname her Cassavetes.
Okay. Now, Clark rushes to the Luthor mansion, or what's left of it, and there is Lex.
Uh-oh. And here comes my latest caption contest picture, where he has his hands out all the way to the sides, and I believe the caption that I chose was, I once fell in a plot hole this big.
Now, he's recovered pretty well from having a heart operation, but obviously that's Darkseid's influence there.
Well, also, never having walked, you know, or like the muscle atrophy.
But again, it is a Superman show, so we have to suspend our disbelief.
He'll have an enormous Von Stoker.
That's right. You'd think he'd have grown himself some hair. He has mastery over the human body.
That's funny, because that was when Lionel said there's just one part that he couldn't get for himself,
right.
And I'm thinking, what, his hair? And they go, his heart. And I went, oh, okay.
He just wanted to grow a goatee.
That's right.
Now, the bald cap.
You know, there's another way that joke could go, but I'm not going to do it, because this is a family-friendly site.
Oh, okay, good. Well, no, the bald cap, here's what's really funny. Okay, we do have some kind of faraway shots right here, which are very well done. But most of the shots, they do cut off the top of his head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just because he is a little bit bigger on the top there than he always has been, because it's a bald cap.
Yeah.
And from what I understand from interviews, it took him a long time to get into that bald cap. But clearly, it's going to have to be just a little bit bigger than if he were to shave his head, which he did not want to have to do.
All his hair has to fit underneath it.
Yeah. In the stills, I could notice it real clearly that it was a bald cap, but in motion, I didn't at all.
No, except when he maybe...
They did do a very good job with it, but again, they do a lot of these close-up shots like they're doing right now.
Yeah, except when he maybe furrows his brow a little bit, you can tell, but other than that, it was a masterful job.
Yeah, you'd have to be looking for it.
Exactly, like we are now. But yeah, if you're listening to it and watching the show as an observer seeing it for the first time, you would not be looking for the bald cap or even notice it.
Right.
If they were going to have to do a bald cap, which they had to do here... It could not have been done better than this.
Exactly. 100%. Now, this was an interesting scene between Lex and Clark because, you know, he obviously still knows that Clark... Or he just called him Kal-El, so he knows his secret. And he's pretty much telling him... It's a bit of a pep talk, saying, look, you have to save. You know what you have to do. You know, maybe Clark Kent can't do it, but obviously you know who can, meaning his super alter ego.
Right.
Well, what's interesting about that is that there are a number of ways that they could have dealt with Lex not remembering either Clark Kent's face to be Superman's, or at least what the deal was with Clark that made him basically Superman, that he would follow along with this well after the fact. But eventually what we end up with was that Lex Luthor does not remember anything about himself or
Clark
Kent.
Which is crazy, but anyway, we'll get to that at the end.
Yes, exactly.
If we remember.
If we remember.
I will make sure that we remember, because I'm still mad about it.
Remember what?
Very good. So yeah. it was a nice first scene back with, for these two, you know, in the ruins of the mansion where they'd had many discussions. And he, just in case Lex wasn't sure, didn't know, Clark super speeds away in front of him. And Lex
that
has
flinch and smile was nice.
Yeah. Now, here we have Oliver coming back to the Watchtower, trying to undo everything that he'd done, puts everything back online, and all the satellites are back, and now he's searching around, and we're not sure what he's searching for, but he zooms in on the building.
Freeze it! Enhance it! Freeze it! Enhance it!
And he saw, obviously, something that he wanted to know, and gets his Green Arrow gear back in order.
Where's the punching glove?
Where's the Green Lantern ring at the bottom?
That's right. Where's the goatee?
And now the sun has pretty much been eclipsed by Apocalypse. And the three... Now, this was a bit of a sticking point with a lot of people, is the fact that here is the three powerful, powerful people, Darkseid's minions, and Green Arrow comes in with three arrows, and these three powerful, powerful people are poof in a puff of smoke it's three arrows in one shot.
It just goes
something
to say
non-small build. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say, if you're ever playing the game Omniscience, Omnipotence, Arrow, always choose Arrow.
One interesting thing is that the guy who plays Glorious Godfrey actually was the voice of Superman in the first episode of the Krypto TV series. Mm-hmm. And other than Henry Cavill, he is the only guy to ever voice Superman outside of something like Saturday Night Live style that is not U.S. born. He was born in Canada.
Huh. There you go. And there they are. They just explode.
I just discovered that today.
Now, were they special arrows, or were they just...
Who knows? But see, there's another major contention I have. Maybe they survived that, but every indication is that they are dead. He is still killing people in the last episode and standing right by Superman as Superman does the same thing.
They will live on as black smoke.
Yes, yes.
Well,
they will return to Apocalypse and become... further Superman villains. That's all that I can really think to say.
Well, the thing is, they did possess actual people. Godfrey was an actual person, and then he was possessed by Darkseid's darkness, if you like. So he wasn't a real person, so the real person that was the shell of Godfrey is now dead.
Well, in hell, Lionel Luthor, for that matter.
Yeah, well, Lionel was actually dead probably from the shot that
Tess... Probably, yeah.
But he's
kind of missing a heart at this point.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. So, yeah, he's dead before Clark gets to him. But here's Lois trying to convince this dumber-than-Clark security guard.
Yoink!
Have a look out the window while I sneak past you.
Mr. Obama, I have to tell you this. Oh, wait, how did you turn white?
Well, he's not the president, this guy. He's the Secretary of State, isn't he?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Secretary of Defense, right?
Oh, I got you.
Defense,
he looks like Joe Biden.
Yeah,
he's the Secretary of Defense, and they're having a war meeting of some kind. And
I like how they have time to make coffee. Did you see that on the table there? Like, I know the world's ending, but I got to have my coffee.
And carry two sugars, please.
It was interesting because Lois talks to them, and they know everything she's saying. She's not actually telling them anything new, but she realizes... Oh, you guys already know exactly what's going on, that your nuclear weapons are not going to be able to do anything. You're just feeding a BS line to the public to make them think you know how to solve the problem.
If they could have afforded it for this episode, if they could have CGI'd the Secretary of Defense as being Kirk Allen and had, like, you know, off to the side Tim Daly and George Newell and... I don't know, that would have been just... flat out amazing for me. That would have made this a 5 out of 5 for me, just this one scene.
Now, she somehow convinces them to hold off 5 minutes five more minutes, and it actually goes on for a lot longer than 5 minutes between when she asks them to hold off till Clark actually does what he needs to do. But
it also doesn't have to be in perfect timing order. It's not 24.
Right.
True.
It's
so this could be going
the whole
on.
Outlandish. The thing of it, like okay, 24-year-old reporter who snuck up onto Air Force One and has absolutely no way at all of knowing anything that's going on, unless of course she knows Superman, which they have no way of knowing the context of, and suddenly they trust her because she looks serious. You know, it's like.
Yeah, why do they trust her? How did they know that she has an inside line to the heroes?
Yeah, well, the reality is they should have pistol-whipped her in the back of the head and thrown her into some cuffs, but that's not what they're going to do. It's an excuse to get Lois Lane in Air Force One to do the burn thing or to do the Superman One thing, depending on how you look at the homage. And it just... It smacks of fan service as opposed to being made necessary by the plot. And what they should have done...
Which there's kind of nothing wrong with.
What's that?
Which there's kind of nothing wrong with.
What? With making it...
Of doing a little bit of fan service within the story.
There's nothing wrong with fan service to me if it's constructed well. If there's a reason for it. Like,
okay,
for instance...
Yeah, I will go
a good example being in comics, you can't just have a character show up that you really like just because you arbitrarily really want to see it. They do it a lot, but that doesn't mean it's good storytelling.
Now, here we have Lionel possessed by Darkseid, and the voice and the face are really creepy. It's just a really just blood-shivering kind of moment. And I don't know what he's dripping with, but I'm guessing it's blood. Or maybe it's the blackness, I don't know. But his pants suits and are all wet.
It's Brainiac-ness. It's the Brainiac T-1000-ness. Somewhere in there. I don't even know. But, what we're about to see is a very, very stunning moment.
Yeah, it's a pivotal moment.
And it's unfortunate that it's going to be followed up by the end of the season...
Villain. Yeah.
In a very cheesy way.
Yeah, well, the Black Crows, I never
the
really understood.
The dark
but...
side.
And he smashes him through, and then he... And this was... While it was an interesting choice... I thought this moment of him reflecting on his trials with Jor-El...
He's in prison! I didn't realize he was in prison. I never noticed that. Jor-El put him in jail!
True, there were the rings there, the prison rings. But this was a really great way of looking back at the 10 seasons of the show. And, you know, okay, while they did focus on all the superheroic moments, not necessarily the character-building moments, it was a great way to... look back at the 10 seasons of this show and see the growth of the character.
And also, since we have... We will soon be hearing music from Superman the movie. But right now what we're hearing is a big build-up of the Smallville theme that has not been put together in quite this way before.
No, exactly. And it kind of been easy for Tom Welling to stand there and just look around the room at nothing... have a look of wonder and remembrance on his face, but because he wouldn't have been seeing what we're seeing now in all these moments of superheroics and, you know, all the past things that happened in over the past 10 seasons.
No, but they filmed him looking around for about 72 hours and just
out the best parts.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Okay, like, so here we are up to season 4, the Mr. Mix's Piddling episode. There's season 5, 6...
World is ending, and it's like, hey, all right, let's pay attention to some of the things that happened to me for a while.
Yeah, but this is kind of out of time. You know, this is not part of the five minutes that we're counting down with Lois. This is outside normal time, and we'll know that because he'll just come back from this in the same pose that we left him.
There he's killing Brainiac. They did the Santa Claus bit too. Did you see that?
I missed that.
He caught Santa.
I did notice that. I sort of look at this as seeing, like, here's where Clark finds his happy thought so he can fly.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he kind of had stopped midair at this point anyway, but... you know, he puts down the helicopter and, you know, we're coming back up to the most recent things and he's seeing them all in the pillars of the fortress crystals. and realizes that the whole time was his trials, not just certain things that he thought were his trials. The whole 10 seasons was a trial.
Which brings him back to the point where he realizes that I can...
This is gorgeous.
Yeah, this is my happy thought.
Yeah, seeing all those pieces of timber fly past him while he's still floating in midair, but unfortunately it's kind of soured by the fact that he just flies through a character
but still,
and goes into
that
black...
That is gorgeous.
Yeah. Black smoke with crows, I don't understand that, but...
I've got to say that that moment is very cheesy to me.
I'm not a big fan of the trails of motion behind a flying character. Why can't he just fly without having these motion trails behind
him? I think that's just to show in the same way. I know we need to talk about this scene that's coming up right now, but I think that's just to show something for the audience where, I mean, they've shown specifically, even though that Superman has trails behind him, or Clark has trails behind him when he runs away at super speed, that when Lana first saw him and saw his powers in season... what was it, 6 or 7? I can't even remember for sure. That he just disappears. Mm. There's no whoosh sound. There's no trail behind him. That's all something for the audience. But yeah, what right. real people are seeing is that it's just snap your fingers and it's gone.
Yeah. Now, yes, this scene with Tess meeting Lex for the first time, really, and I was surprised. It was a tender moment, and then... You thought something was going to happen, but I didn't expect the stabbing.
Yeah, it was kind of abrupt, and it didn't really make sense. It was just kind of, every finale's got to have a death.
It's like a tender moment, and then crunch.
If this were a DC TV show, they would kill the Flash at this point.
Yes.
And that's quite a graphic, seeing the knife coming out of her, and he's... But I'm still not clear on exactly what she did here. Can somebody please explain?
All that she did... Go ahead, Neil.
I was just saying she got the point. I was making a bad joke.
Oh, okay.
Okay. She takes some sort of serum, puts it on his face that makes him forget. Now, this serum comes from Summerholt, some sort of project that Lex started up years and years ago that had to do with memories. And that does lead back to seasons 2 and 3.
Okay, so she knew she had some kind of preconceived idea that she would need to come here and wipe Lex's memory of Clark's identity, but she actually wipes him of all his memories, which would mean, as Neil said in his review, that he should be...
crapping his pants.
Yeah, he should be a vegetable.
Well, in the same way that Clark went through somewhat chronologically his timeline, which brought him to the point that he could fly and he can become Superman, what we get is the opposite for Lex, who is the opposite of Superman in so many ways.
Yep.
And so I think that's what's being brought in here.
Okay,
all of this that they're showing, it's being taken away. And
That's the episode.
Yes. All of these things are being taken away, which unfortunately, and this is what we really need to talk about at this point, means that everything that is built up about Lex Luthor through the first 7 seasons does not matter at all.
Yeah, his whole character arc has been erased as far as he's concerned.
I mean, if she'd gone back and if she had said this will erase the past 5 years of your life, and he went back to being from Lex Luthor season 5 or 6.
It's internally inconsistent, too, because the Summerholt thing established that there was a way to remove explicit memories, you know? They removed Clark's secret, essentially, right? Didn't they, if I recall correctly?
I'm really sorry to interrupt, but here comes the moment where Luthor Corp becomes Lex Corp.
Yes.
And that's something just worth mentioning. But go ahead and continue on with what you were saying.
Well, that was about it. I was just pointing out the inconsistency. I did not read L-E-X when I saw it. I saw L kind of another half.
Yeah, it's L, yeah. And then the thing next to it is supposed to be the U is cut in half, so it's almost like an E.
Yeah, it seemed like...
But again, it was a bit cheesy.
Kind of hackneyed.
Again, even though he can now fly, he ran because he doesn't have the suit on. No flights, no tights.
Right.
And, yeah, he's in the fortress, and he realizes that, you know, he's come to a conclusion that, you know, he's met his destiny. And Jor-El is honored by the comments that he makes. And for some reason, the suit has to come out from being underground when it's been encased in everyone's view for a number of episodes now, but it's pretty dramatic, and it comes through from underground. And is it just me, or does it look different in the case and then in Jonathan's hands? Is it the same suit?
You know, I think I saw what you're talking about.
Yeah, no, I also see what you're talking about, but that's okay because they're always going to make, like, you know, 10 or 12 suits for him to wear, and I mean, many of them are CGI. One thing that I think is important that we just finished watching was the assuredness in Clark's eyes, which is something that
we haven't seen.
This actor, Tom Welling, is capable of doing. He can have that assuredness in his eyes, but we've not seen it quite to this level very often. It's kind of already over, but we're going to see it again in just 1 second.
We're going to see a lot of it because they never show anything below his neck when he's wearing the suit except for the frickin' cape.
Ugh. Well, yeah, because he's when they show him as Superman, and again, we're getting the Smallville theme right here, because that's what this is all about, and we're going to get the Superman theme in just a couple of minutes. But, go ahead.
While I still have a minute before this gets too intense into the Superman stuff, I wanted to point out that for me, the John Williams theme in the end was not actually a good thing. I was so used to thematically the Smallville music that even though I recognize and know and love the John Williams theme, it seemed like a completely different thing. It seemed like it was like watching another it was like having another show's soundtrack with this show. And that's while I understand the need to do it and why they did it,
it was a different.
It kind of irked me.
The S that he hands him doesn't have that same, like a pattern in it that the one that encased in the ice did. But what did you think of Jonathan handing him the suit?
That's cool.
I kind of wish it was Martha in some ways, but okay, we're about to get to a really big moment here. But I just want to say that. I'm going to wait to say it. I want silence for this.
Now he's in the air. He's in his Clark Kent suit.
Yeah.
And we have the cape flapping behind him in his hand. And then he obviously puts it on. And we kind of see something the side of him. But now we're only getting the very close-up of Clark's face, which is overtaken by the cape. And then we get a CGI Superman flying past.
Obviously.
I'm so glad that the S was on the back.
Yeah, the S on the back of the cape was a great
moment.
That's
something that was missing from Superman Returns, and their only thing about not having it was that it wasn't there in the animated series, and that was only because they didn't want to animate it.
Now, this was pretty well done. Lois and the guys from in the aeroplane being tossed around, which is reminiscent of Superman Returns in a way, but I think they did it really well for a TV budget.
Absolutely.
And now, I love this moment. Where he flies up to the side of the... Now, I don't even know if this is Tom Welling's body, but when...
I don't think it is right here.
No, that's where CGI
he's
under the aeroplane,
yeah, exactly.
And then he comes to the window, and I don't think that's him.
That does look like his face.
That's not him. But anyway, it's a great moment, and again, like Neil said, we only see close-up of his face with the cape fluttering behind him, and we see something that, to me, was reminiscent of the Kirk Allen serials, the way the Superman looks. It's an
it's
animated...
It's just a gorgeous shot, though.
Yeah, brilliant shot.
I completely agree with you. This is the 2011 version of the Kirk Allen serials, essentially. Once Superman takes off, he is animated, but now he's CGI instead of just being drawn.
Yeah. Now, this is obviously a pivotal moment for Lois. She's becoming the reporter who tells the story that everybody needed to know, and there's the president. He was on board. Mr. President.
And with a planet that size, that close, I just want to point out that it would not necessarily rip the Earth apart.
But there would be earthquakes.
There would be a gravity issue.
Now, this
just leave it at that.
This to me, this flying, this Clark, that is comical to me.
Yeah, that's not very, yeah.
Well, with the trail behind him, but that's so that you can see him, because they had to make him small enough so that you couldn't tell that it wasn't Tom Welling.
Yeah, now, and again, Superman Returns ended with him lifting something heavy out into space, and here we have it in Smallville, but we don't see, well, I can't even see where Superman is in that picture, but Apocalypse is being moved away, at the shadow, the sun beams back on these people, and the symbols are gone from their foreheads, and they're all happy and joyful.
I like
and
that lady's got her baby out there as Apocalypse approaches, you know, she's like, let's go greet it, you know.
And they're all hugging and they're all happy and they're all just amazed and in tears, and it's, you know, very joyful.
I wondered if that was the kid from the meteor shower.
Yeah, good point. Who knows? May have been.
A lot like him.
And again, we almost get this tantalizing zooming in on Superman, and then they change it to the last page of the comic book.
Yeah.
And again, this is the thing I was going to talk about a moment ago. We get the Smallville theme, and it's in a totally new way, and this is basically the Superman theme that Smallville would do. And now we're coming back to, you know, the Superman in the comic book that Chloe is reading to her son.
Which, again, there is Clark Kent's whole story in published form telling his secret identity.
And here's Superman the movie music.
Yep.
Right exactly there. And I have to agree with Neil that it was not necessary to do that. What we're leading into, especially with the end of this series and the upcoming Superman movie, is a new Superman, a new theme.
Now, this kid has, Neil pointed out, pajamas for the hero that was in the Smallville series. What's the name of the hero that was in
Warrior Angel?
The Warrior Angel.
Warrior
that's
Angel,
it.
Yeah.
And
yeah, here's the other thing about that music before it happens real quick. Essentially, the music hits its apex a little too early. That's another part of the jarring part. It does the
before he reaches the top. Yep. So here
they
we are.
He'd be in the full costume by that point, if anything.
Right.
Since he only does the shirt rip, it just kind of happens too early. So here's Aaron Ashmore as the actual Jimmy Olsen. And a mention of Perry White. Obviously, they couldn't get Michael McKean for this.
But he did do voiceover work for it, which was just as cool, I guess.
They probably did it over the phone, which is fine. I'm happy with that.
Now, this is obviously 7 years in the future, and Lois and Clark still aren't married. Who knows why in 7 years they weren't able to tie the knot. But here we are in the future, and Lois and Jimmy are striding through the Daily Planet, and she... Obviously, it was interesting. She said, "I want abs. I want cape. I want, you know, we want abs. We want cape too. You know,
4+4+4
As president, as promised, all the way back in the 6th episode of the whole season.
But in 2018, is that incorrect? I'm guessing
a little bad math there. It's supposed to be 2016 or 2020. Because we have elections every 4 years, and it's going to be one in 2012, 2016, and 2020.
And now
little bit of bad math there.
We had the bumbling Clark Kent bumping into people, and he and Lois meet on the stairs, and no one's watching, so you can drop the act, and there's your rings. 7 years are still the same rings. And
all that I can think of is that he kissed her and made her forget. And then they fell in love all over again.
Now there's a bomb in some elevator in some building, and he says to her, I love this line, tell
there
the minister
is.
I'm going to be a couple of minutes late. A few minutes late. And there's
the
music.
The music starts way too early, right there.
And she's, you know, still stargazed, and he opens the door, throws down his... What's it in his hand? What's it?
I think that was his vest.
His vest.
Picking
out,
throws the glasses too. Did you notice
that?
Yeah,
he drops the glasses. He's probably
like a $300 pair of glasses. Ah, screw it. I'm on a reporter salary.
Loosens a tie, rips open the shirt, and gets close to the camera, and that's the S.
And we do get the credits in a similar fashion to we got to what we got in the Superman movies and Superman Returns.
Now
that's just hammy.
Now okay, it's finished.
Yep.
I had you know, a big smile on my face. I was really impressed. I was very uplifted by the whole thing, especially the 7 years in the future part that was just at the end of the episode. But I did feel a little bit cheated that we didn't see Tom Welling in the costume.
That is to put it mildly for me. But I expected it. I honestly expected it.
I felt the same way. In fact, I posted several times on Facebook, I hope that he does not get in the costume. And people would ask me why. And I said, because we will get so many people who are just annoyed at that. And it will amuse me.
But, yeah, I mean, we're still seeing people have to Photoshop images of Tom Welling on Christopher Reeve's head or Brandon Routh's body or whatever it might be. That, of course, we never fully saw him in the costume. It was always neck and head shots with a fluttering cape behind him. And the only thing we saw was him ripping open the Clark Kent shirt to reveal a Superman T-shirt, if you like, underneath.
It was pretty spot on.
Go ahead, Neil.
I was just going to say, it was really spot on with the movies. It was like so damn close to the shot that it gave me chills. But at the same time, when you think about it, for more than 3 seconds, it starts to cascade.
I was just going to say that if I can go on Facebook and put a picture of myself in a Superman Snuggie, I don't understand why Tom Welling can't just put the damn suit on.
Exactly. Yeah. It just stank of the fact that they did everything they could to do everything they could other than show him in the costume.
I don't understand the motivation. If it's on Welling's end, I don't understand how he thinks that now he could not possibly be associated with Superman. You know what I mean? Mm.
And there are still people out there who say that Tom Welling should be Superman in the next movie, even though Henry Cavill has been cast. And he's working on, you know, he's weightlifting, he's learning the American accent,
yeah,
you know, learning it better than he knows it already, at least. And they still want Tom Welling to be Superman, and they just don't understand that Tom Welling doesn't want to be Superman.
Yeah. Well, we've made the commentary on the episode. We've all made our statements in regards to our thoughts on it. We'll leave it up to everybody else to form their own opinions. How will they rate it? If you guys had to give it a out of 5 rating, 5 being the best, what would your rating be, Neil?
I'd give it a 1.5.
Jeffrey?
I would go with a 3.
Yeah, I would probably go with a 3 as well. It was uplifting, and it was fantastic at times, but it was a letdown in other times. And overall, as a finale, it's better than some TV series we've seen. Seinfeld and Lost come to mind. But all in all, it was Smallville.
It was very much Smallville. I have to concede that.
I completely agree with that. And I do want to take 1 second before we do sign off to mention that this is... I'll go ahead and make this the official first announcement that coming up in about, well, a couple of weeks, maybe a month, there will be a Smallville commentary podcast that will be hitting the Superman homepage that everybody should be taking a look at. And it will run very much like this, where you can go ahead and press play on the episode and press play on the MP3 at the same time and listen to it like it's a podcast from a couple of Superman experts. The official announcement will be later on, but I just wanted to go ahead and say, stay tuned for that and keep looking at the Superman homepage because it's going to show up there.
Well, we'll sign off with that, and thank you both Neil and Jeffrey for participating in this Smallville series finale commentary. I appreciate it, and we look forward to more from you both at the Superman homepage.
Thank you for having us on, and thank everybody for listening.
Thank you very much, Steve, and thank you everybody who's listening.
You've been listening to a Smallville series finale commentary from SupermanHomepage.com.